Episode 1125, My Strength is My Story with Carrie Wyatt Kent. Godspace.
Moms, needing a little inspiration and a ray of hope? You've come to the right place. This is the show that you can turn to for just the pick-me-up you need. This is Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. Here's your host, certified life coach, personal trainer, and nutritionist, Christiane Wargo.
Staring at a stop sign, watching people drive.
Happy, happy day. Today is my favorite day. It is my Strength is My Story series, and we have with us an extraordinary woman. Her name is Carrie Wyatt Kent. I promise you, you're going to fall in love with everything that she has. She's just going to resonate with your heart. You're going to want to stay tuned. For those of you who are brand new to Create Your Now, friends and family of Carrie's, welcome to our family. I'm so delighted of your presence. If you already haven't had the opportunity, you'll want to head on over to createyournow.com where you can learn more and sign up for the Kisses newsletter, the Keep It Simple Strategy Everyday Solutions to Live, Love, and Impact. Well, I got to tell you that Carrie is one who wants to create God's space by living at God's pace. It's kind of a play on words. Think about how it's spelled. Look at it. G-O-D-S-P-A-C-E. Well, we're going to dive deep into that, along with laundry, perfection, achievement, and we even talk about the Sabbath and worship. And we can't forget the busyness, the joy. And what about the freedom? Where is God? Where is He showing up in your life? Where does He want you to show up in His life? It's a deep dive, and I know your heart will resonate with what Carrie has to say. So without further ado, let's welcome in Carrie Wyatt Kent, Godspace. Hello and welcome to Create Your Now. Today is a very special day. It is my Strength is My Story series, and we have with us an incredible, encouraging woman, Carrie Wyatt Kent. She is a wife of 27 years, well, 27 years in March, and mother to two beautiful children. Carrie is the co-author to many books and has collaborated with people like Rick Warren, Bill Hybels, and the staff of Prison Fellowship. She's the founder and president of A Powerful Story. And if that doesn't fill her calendar, Carrie is a speaker and author of now 11 books with her brand new book, Godspace, Embracing the Inconvenient Adventure of Intimacy with God. She continually writes for a variety of print and digital publications, including Christianity Today, Gifted for Leadership, The High Calling, smallgroups.com, and Today's Christian Woman. Carrie also serves as a lay pastor at Willow Creek Community Church. Get your calendar out because Carrie has got a challenge for you. Welcome, my friend and sister in Christ. It's so good to have you here, Carrie.
Oh, Christiane, thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm just delighted to be here.
Oh, well, I think we're in for a real treat. I have read your new book, and oh my gosh, number one, the title grabbed me. I'm like, Godspace? Where did that come from?
You know, I always have wanted to create more space in my life for God. And I was thinking about how do I do that? And it's kind of a play on words because, as I kind of say in the introduction, the way to create God's space is to live at God's pace. You know, you just move the space in the word over. And what is God's pace? It doesn't mean not moving at all. I think God calls us to meaningful action and meaningful engagement with the world, but not to the frantic, hurried, crazy-making pace that we live at sometimes. And so the book is really an invitation to create space by changing the pace of your life. And it doesn't mean you have to go be in a monastery or withdraw from society or, you know, give away your children or whatever. It's really about just choosing, making good choices, and choosing to be intentional with the way that we live. Mm.
And with the start of the new year, it's a very important reminder to be intentional.
Absolutely. Life can slide by. I can, you know, go, oh, I'm just going to check in on Facebook. And, you know, an hour later, I'm like, what did I just do with that hour of my life? It's gone. And to decide how do I want to live my life and how does God want me to live my life, and paying attention to that and making really deliberate choices. You don't have to do everything and you don't have to do nothing. You have to find this balance in the middle where you can go, all right, I'm going to do what God has called me to do. I'm going to let certain things go. Sometimes we're busy because we're trying to do everything for everyone. Mm-hmm. And especially as women, I think we go, oh, why do I have to do everything? It's because we do everything. You know, we don't, but sometimes we're doing things that God never asked us to do. And so the book is really an invitation to kind of get clarity. What is God, you know, inviting you into? How can you do the things you're already doing, but do them in a way that is focused on God and allows that relationship with God to grow?
Mm, that is beautiful. Well, I want to dive into the book, but I first want to ask you this question. What keeps the joy in your heart?
What keeps the joy in my heart? I love that. You know, when I was writing this book, there's a chapter on hospitality. And each, you know, as you write a book, you kind of figure out, okay, the book's supposed to be, you know, 40 or 50,000 words, so I got to have this much words for each chapter. I had to cut, I just started writing about hospitality, and, you know, I had like the length of three chapters. I had enough words for three chapters, and I had to cut it down. Having people at my, and I'm, it's not entertaining, it's not Martha Stewart hospitality, it's just creating this space where people feel welcome, and they are, you know, comfortable. My house is not fancy at all. It's very ordinary. But we did this at Christmas Eve. We had just one other family over that we really enjoy, good friends of my kids and us. And we had them over for dinner. And then we had probably four or five other families came by for dessert. And my house was crowded and laughing. People were laughing and connecting with one another. And I just sat there and went, oh, This brings me joy. It brings me so much joy to just, and I don't have to wow them with a fancy meal or whatever. I just create this space where they can gather, and I love that. So that's one of the things that does definitely amps up my joy.
I love it. And you share a story in your hospitality about how your house was full and you had like kids everywhere when you were writing that, the beginning of that chapter, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. For a while, Aaron was a senior in high school. We go to Willow. It's a really big church, and so the youth group is very big. And the way they manage that is to have the kids, after they gather at church on a Sunday morning for their time together with all of them, they split up by high school and go to different people's homes for lunch and small group time. And so, you have to have a house for kids to go to, and you can volunteer. And my son said, can we volunteer to do that? I said, oh my gosh, yes, that would be great. You know? And so we had 50 kids every Sunday in our house for the school year, basically. They got there at 1 and left at 3 or 4. Like it was crazy. So, but I loved it. I loved being, and I loved that my kids loved growing up with, you know, knowing they could bring kids, they could bring that, you know, it's a put your feet up on the coffee table kind of place, our house. And, we did that for a year, and that was a great experience to do as a family.
So warm and welcoming. Nowadays though, we get so wrapped up, we don't even take time to have our own family over.
Right. I know. Yeah. And that's been something that I've had to do too, I just have one brother. He lives out in Arizona. I see him, you know, on the holidays maybe, but my husband's from a big family. And so one of the stretches in hospitality was, okay, I got to welcome my husband's family. And I think I've really, grown in that. You know, I think I read about it in the book, a few years back. Well, actually, it's been a long time. In 2002, my husband's brother died unexpectedly and tragically. And after that, our family gatherings kind of, like, the family just didn't even want to get together. They didn't want to be reminded of, see that empty chair at the table. And so I didn't think, well, he's, you know, what do I do? I can't force them to do that. But eventually I said, you know, let's gather to the family. And so I started being more intentional about inviting my, you know, his other siblings to gather with us for holidays. And it's kind of funny, it, you know, just I've grown closer to them by extending that hospitality to my family and seeing my husband's family as my family. That's, you know, we came from very different families, and, you know, so it just extending that hospitality actually, I think, expanded my heart toward them and helped me to connect with them in a deeper way and hopefully minister to them. So,
well, I could feel the joy in your heart and the love that you have. It's priceless, Carrie.
And thank you.
I think nowadays, and in your book, you talk about the busyness, and our answer all the time of how are you is, oh, I'm so busy.
Right.
And you talk about that being a mark of significance. And when you tell your story about, you know, your family and the loss of your brother-in-law, it brought me to tears when I read it. Mm. My father died unexpectedly.
I'm sorry.
I was older, but dying at 65, you know, years old, that's just a baby. And I think I remember your brother-in-law was like 34.
Yeah, he was very young.
I mean, you look at that and you're going, what? There's so much more left that,
right,
you know, to live.
It was very tragic, you know, and it was, you know, it happened in 2002. And so it felt like this double whammy of, you know, you're still fresh from the 9/11 attacks. And then, you know, you feel like the world's all crazy anyway. And then the next year, a year later, you know, we lost Tom. And that was, it was just a difficult time for his whole family and for us, you know, and, you know, even my kids, they were old enough to have known, you know, their uncle. And so it's hard, but sometimes that's what hospitality is not entertaining, but creating a space where people can come and feel welcomed and safe, and where, you know, here we are around this table. We know your story. We welcome you. And we have, there's space for joy and sadness, and we don't have to pretend. And that, I think, is a gift that people are longing for, is a sacred space where they can just bring them their whole selves and bring their story and be known and begin to know other people as well. It's to me, it's sort of a holy calling. And it's so far from what our culture sees as hospitality, you know, of entertaining and just the right, you know, Pinterest, you know, table setting and stuff like that. And that's not really what it's about. Mm.
Jesus wasn't much into the Pinterest idea. I mean, he just sat down and broke bread in the middle of a field. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, exactly. Like, give me some fish. We're going to do fillets, you know.
That's right. You know,
fillets.
We can learn a lot if we would just go back and we take the time and we make the space. So,
right.
First of all, people are going to want to pick up their own copy of God's Space, Embracing the Inconvenient Adventure of Intimacy with God. This book, how you break it down, honestly, in my opinion, you don't have to read it from the front to the back.
No.
You can go in and pick, because you highlight, and we can't go over all of this. To those who are listening and watching, there's a lot of areas that you're going to want to dive deeper into, so you're going to want to pick up your own copy. But it's the Sabbath, hospitality, which we're talking about now, worship, mm-hmm. simplicity, gratitude, generosity, and critical thinking. And I love how you intertwined your own personal stories along with scripture. You didn't leave that out, because you're, you know, a serious spiritual formation writer in your works previously. How did that influence your writings when it came to God's Space?
How did spiritual formation and that kind of thing? Yeah, I think sometimes as I have written about and talked about spiritual formation, a lot of times people go, oh, that's like this, you know, 401 level spirituality thing that's over here. And then my real life is over here. And my goal was to integrate. And it's not a, you know, only for spiritual giants type of thing, or it shouldn't be. Every day our spirits are being formed. They're being formed by what we look at on Pinterest or television or YouTube. They're being formed by our relationships. Our spirit is always in the process of formation. And so how can we take our real daily lives, where we have to get things done and we got to drive carpools and we got a job and we got all these things, how do we bring our spiritual formation and our intentional connection with God into the space of our real everyday lives. That was my goal, and why each of these things, you know, they're all practices that we think are one thing, but they're actually a little bit different. I tried to give a different twist on what they are. Mm-hmm. So, and they all sort of flow together, and they're connected, you know. And Sabbath is the foundation of it. I've written about Sabbath before in a couple of my other books. And Sabbath has been one of the most formational, most profound spiritual practices. And people think, oh, I could never do that. I could never do that. But it's actually, it's not as hard as we make it. You know, it's really a gift that we're just too busy to open. And when we live at a sane pace, and when we take one day to stop, really to Sabbath means to stop, then everything else can kind of fall into, our priorities can kind of align a little better. If we try to like add all this other stuff into a life that's already too frantic, mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to work. Or it'll be harder and we'll end up exhausted, which is not the goal. Exhaustion is not the goal. This is not more stuff to do. It's a way of doing what you're doing now in a different way.
Mm-hmm. And doing it to the best of God's design for
right.
your life.
And different in everybody's life, you know, it looks different in everybody's life, but.
One of the things you say in the Sabbath, you say, we need to find a way to slow down the miles per hours and the RPMs of our lives. How do you slow down? I mean, you're a mom. Yes, your children are now older, and so you have a little more space for mom, your own time. But that doesn't ever take away that you're a mom. You fill a responsibility and a role that, even though they're not maybe there, you know, 12 hours a day or sleeping or right. having dinner at your table, you still have a role to fill. How in the world do you carve out the time and finding that Sabbath and giving yourself honestly permission to stop, to rest?
Yeah. And, you know, it's my kids are in their early 20s now, but we started doing Sabbath when the kids were in like kindergartenish age. And, you know, it looked different in different seasons. But it's funny because I'm sitting at my desk as I'm talking to you, and I have this piece of paper. It's a card from my daughter. Happy birthday, Mom. And this is part of what inspired me to write this book, actually, is this little letter. She cuts out things out of magazines and like makes her own stationery. It's cute. But she said, instead of writing you a mushy letter, we have a joke about mom likes mushy letters because words are my love language. I decided to compile a list of values that I'm grateful you raised me with. Hospitality, gathering people around the table. A love for reading, stories. Sabbath, Sundays, quiet time. Very limited television. Chores, pitching in. Goes on. And a lot of the chapters in the book came from this letter. And that chores one is the answer to your question. You cannot do it all. And we all try to do it all. And we go, why isn't anybody helping me? We don't ask them to. When my kids were old enough to reach the buttons on the washing machine, I said for Mother's Day, what I wanted was a chore chart. And also everybody does their own laundry, including my husband. And because I'm not structured enough to have like, okay, you know, I vacuum on Mondays and I do laundry on Tuesdays. I don't do that. So we would have these arguments. Where's my soccer uniform? Or my husband, where's my blue shirt I need to wear? I don't know, probably in the laundry basket. And why didn't I wash it? And I'm like, because I didn't, you know, I don't have a laundry day. So we delegated laundry and chores. And it was really interesting like a couple weeks into this thing of, you know, kids doing more chores and my husband doing more chores. My daughter said, well, who did all this stuff before we had the chore chart? And I said, ding, 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 you know, you're looking at her, sister. And so it was this good realization. My kids, like they had to do chores. And that's one of the ways that mom can have a rest is if the kids and the husband participate in the upkeep of the household, especially as women are working, because keeping a household is a full-time job. So if you have even a part-time job outside the house, you know, then you've got 1.5 jobs. Everybody needs to participate. And I think it's really good for kids to realize that those things need to get done and somebody needs to do them. So So anyway, that's a big part of how you slow down, is not deciding not to do the things that God's not calling you to do and to delegate a lot of the rest of it.
That's good. Yeah, I need to work on the delegation part still.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard.
It is, because sometimes you're like, oh, but I could just do it right the first time. They don't have to go back three or four more times to do it.
Yep.
So. But it is part of learning. And I think as parents, we need to be able to gift that to our children.
Right. My son loves to clean. God bless him. And part of it is, like, when he was little, he wanted to help me mop or sweep. And I let him. And that was so hard, you know, because you're like, I could do it a lot better. But, you know, he would want to, you know, use the broom and stuff like that. And I let him, so because he wanted to then, you know, they don't when they're if you start when they're teenagers, it's too late. You got to let them do some little chores, you know, even like clearing the table, like they have little plastic plates and they can, if they drop it, it does, you know, it's fine. Yeah. Put it in the dishwasher, you know, like do these little things that were part of the program that taught them that it's not, they're not, you know, guests in their own home.
Yeah. So. And, you know, unfortunately nowadays, a lot of things are handed on a silver platter to our children. Yeah. They don't have to work for anything. And so when they get to the real world and they go for that first job,
they're
and
shocked.
They get, you know, turned down from it, they're disappointed. They need to start learning a lot earlier. And you've definitely set your children up for success with that.
Thanks. It's not easy, but, you know, it really, I think it helps them appreciate things a little more, you know, when they have to do just simple things.
So finding that space for you, that Sabbath, is really about the chores and helping with the delegation, allowing the family to come in and work together.
Yeah, that's one of the things. I would also say we chose to only let our kids do one, they could do one sport and one sort of artistic pursuit at a time, like piano lessons or art lessons, and then like, you know, whatever sport they were playing, and just said no to multiple sports and multiple activities per child, which I only had two, and it still kept us quite busy. You know, when you have five, you know, again, even if they only do one thing each, that could be every day of the week, you know. But setting those limits, I think, tells your children something really important. Even if you have five kids and they all do one thing, you're busy. But there's a good message to saying to your child, yeah, you can try different things, but not all at the same time. You can't have it all at once, because that's a myth in our culture. We can have it all. And I think you can have a lot, but just not all at the same time. There are seasons, you know? And so I think that was a good exercise in delayed gratification and restraint to just say, okay, you know, we're going to do one thing at a time. So that was helpful too, because then we're not, you know, running everywhere a million miles an hour, just getting to kids' activities, you know?
Right. And that's easy to do no matter how many children you have. You could have one and it could be crazy. Sure.
Isn't there pressure? I was amazed at when my kids were smaller, and I think this is even more now today. So much peer pressure. Oh my gosh, you haven't signed him up for baseball? He's five. How's he ever going to get a scholarship? You know? And you're like, what? You know? And you buy into the crazy. Oh, that must be true, because somebody told me, you know? You know, my son didn't like sports that much. He hated them. And then in high school, discovered volleyball, because he was all of a sudden, he was 6'4", and loved it, and started in high school and had a great time and made the varsity when he was, you know, I mean, it's, you can do it. You know, you don't have to like push them to do things when they're little just to keep up with, you know, it. I think we all want to win, and you have to ask yourself once in a while, win what? What are you trying to win? So it's okay to be countercultural. I think it's odd that Christians don't want to be countercultural, because that's what we're called to be sometimes. So
yes, and I think it's a challenge, because as human beings, especially as moms, we are those nurturers and we are people pleasers. We want to please everybody with the food that we put on the table, how we fold the laundry, how clean our house is, everything that we're involved in. How do you stop striving and, you know, just going for everything, the gusto, every single day?
You know, for me, it's maintaining that connection with Jesus. And I think that is knowing that we are loved and actually sitting still for even just 10 minutes in the morning. I mean, you know, we feel so empty when we are running around and running around. And it's, I think of it as like, we've got this cup in our hand and we're like empty. And we're like, God, I need you to fill me up, fill me up, fill me up, fill me up. And we're like, try to pour water in a cup that's going like this. You can't, you know, you need to be still and settle and just let God love you. And I think a lot of times we think, I've got to do this. I've got, if I do this Bible study or I do this, you know, program of some sort, or if I just, you know, volunteer more at church, or I, you know, spend hours and hours studying the Bible, which I think is time well spent. But a lot of times we bring our doing and achievement and striving mentality even into our relationship with God. And sometimes he just wants us to sit at his feet. I mean, just imagine yourself being like Mary when, you know, Jesus visited Mary and Martha in their home, and she just sat at Jesus' feet and listened, which was actually a radical act in that day because women weren't allowed to like learn at the feet of a rabbi, and she did it. And so there's, in our day, sitting and learning and just being with Jesus is a radical act as well for different reasons.
Mm-hmm. So, so true. Well, I got to ask the obvious question. What does your Sabbath look like? Because I know there are women going, come on, how do you really do your Sabbath? How do you really find that time?
You know, it's funny because over the years it's changed, you know, depending on the season of life, right? So when the kids were small, and my husband works as a realtor. So sometimes he would be a part of that, you know, because a lot of women are like, well, how do I get my husband to do it? You can't get anybody to do anything, but you can only change yourself. And so one of the things I did was you have to, you know, in the Bible, actually, like we read about something called Preparation Day, which was the day before the Sabbath, which meant doing some cleaning, doing some prep, doing some cooking, making sure you had everything available so that you could relax. Like you have to choose to shop on a different day so that you don't have to run to the grocery store. You have to do a little planning of, like, what I did was I always made a little more meals on Thursday and Friday than we could eat. And then, or, you know, so that we would have leftovers available on Sunday and we could eat those. Or if I felt like cooking, I would cook. But we really tried not to shop, which is the thing that you can, almost anybody can choose not to shop on Sunday. And I think that's biblical. You know, one of the interesting things about the Sabbath command is that it's not just for the men, who were the head of the, you know, culture at that time, but it was like you give your manservant and your maidservant. It was men and women who were slaves or, you know, servants or whatever. Even your animals, your donkeys, give them a day off. And it was this leveling of the playing field. And when we shop on Sabbath, we keep people who are serving us working, you know, and that's part of our culture. But again, it's sort of just standing against culture. So eliminate shopping, which you can do by doing it on a different day. Hold it loose. Like sometimes my kids had sports stuff on Sundays and we chose, okay, we're going to go to their game or whatever, but we didn't go from the game to, you know, Home Depot to the grocery store to, you know, Target or 20 other things. And hold the season of it. Like when your kids are little, sometimes when in the summer we would go sailing and go up to the lake and be with my husband's family. Sometimes my husband was working and I couldn't change that, but we would go to the, you know, the local, swimming pool, and we'd go swimming in the evening on, you know, hot summer day and have ice cream for dinner. And that was our Sabbath. Like we had a lot of flexibility with it. And then, like I said, you know, when we hosted house groups, that was on Sunday. And again, we had to prepare the day before to kind of get the house ready for, you know, an onslaught of 50 kids. Ironically, I would clean before they came. I'm not sure why I did that. 'Cause they pretty much, you know, undid that. So
just a little, you know, bit.
Just, yeah, you know, but just have it ready so that people, you know, had space to, you know, be there. And so it changed from season to season, you know. And again, as the kids got older, one of the things, and I think this was true all along, it was a day when I shut down my computer. Like, I did not check email, check social media, do work. All of my work is on a computer. You know, I write words, and that's what I do all day. And so I gave myself a digital Sabbath as well. And my kids, even as they got older, they might not want to do something together as a family, and they might be with friends, but they knew I was available. They knew I was interruptible, especially, I mean, I tried to be that as a mom all the time, a working from home mom, but I couldn't always. Sometimes I'd be like, mommy's got a deadline. You guys have to, like, you know, watch Barney or something. But on Sunday, I was available and interruptible. And so we could do silly little things, but if they wanted to talk, they knew I was available. And I think that's a huge gift to give your family, you know? Not that you're everybody's slave. And you know, I involved them in preparation day, you know, having the kids help. Because we all want to relax together as a family, we're all going to, you know, clean up the house on Saturday mornings or, you know, whatever time it would fit in with other activities. I realize Saturdays can be a busy day for people as well. But and what I advise people who are like, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? Your life didn't get this busy overnight. It's like weight loss, you know, like when you go, oh my gosh, I'm 10 pounds overweight. How'd that happen? Yesterday I weighed 10 pounds less. No, you know, it was one cookie at a time. Right. And so you gradually, you know, got to wherever it is that you go, oh, I want to make some changes. So you can't trying to make too radical a change is probably not going to work out very well. But what I tell people is, what's one thing? Because I think the Sabbath is about freedom. What's one thing you wish you could be free from? Maybe it's laundry. So don't do laundry on one day a week. You have 6 days. 6 days may you, you know, do all your laundry, but on the seventh day, you know, don't. And then one thing that you would like to do. Maybe it's have time to go for a walk or to read a book or to call a friend and just chat and say, how are you doing? You know, like, if you had the time, what's one thing you wish you could do? Because really the Sabbath, again, it's about freedom. What do you want to let go of? And what's one thing you'd like to add? And build it slowly that way and experiment. And you may go, you know what? I tried going for a walk on Sabbath and I hated it. So I'm not going to do that. I'm going to take a nap instead. And that's okay. Like, you know, build the practice the way that fits what's restful for you. You know, like, I have a friend who doesn't like to do yard work. I often would garden on the Sabbath because I spend all day typing on a computer, and being outside and being in my garden felt restful to me. But to her, it felt like a lot of work and she didn't enjoy it because she didn't like gardening. I said, then don't, there's no law, garden on the Sabbath, don't garden on the Sabbath. Like, do what brings you joy. And I think that's the thing, Christiane, a lot of us, especially women, we never ask, what brings you joy? We ask other people that. How can I help you? How can I serve you? How can I please you? But we never ask ourselves, what brings me joy? Because sometimes if you ask people that, especially women, they're like, I don't know. You get the deer in the headlights look of, I don't know what brings me joy. Like, nobody's asked me that for such a long time. I don't know. And I think Sabbath can give you a chance to go, oh, I could do something that brings me joy. And I could try it. Like, what do I like to do? You know, some people like to do crafts, like, you know, like Pinteresty, you know, cool. They go to Michael's or Hobby Lobby and they just find all kinds of inspiration. I am not that girl. I'm terrible at crafts, but if crafts float your boat and it brings you joy and it's relaxing, then maybe that's something you make time for on a day of rest and it's okay, you know?
Yeah, we need to lock in that freedom and specifically that joy, because, you know, this is the day that the Lord has made and he wants us to rejoice, not only in him, but in the gifts and the blessings that he gives us. And too many times we are just letting everything that we have from him just float by us and just Facebook, really? An hour on Facebook? I've done it too. I'm guilty. All of a sudden I'm like, oh, Weird. It's sometimes more like 2 hours.
Right. You know? Where'd it go? Yeah. And you think connecting with some people I really care about, but then I'm also connecting with people I don't have no clue about, you know, So it's really easy to waste time. I mean, television does the same thing. You know, you don't, after watching television for 2 hours, go, oh, I feel so relaxed and so fulfilled. Like, you don't, you know, but sometimes we're tired and that makes sense, but it would be better to just like take a little nap or go for a walk or do something that is, you know, not work, but also not just mindless numbing out, you know?
Yeah, well, you went to pick up your own copy of God's Space, Embracing the Inconvenient Adventure of Intimacy with God. She shares a lot of great stories in here, and the Sabbath is just one of them. That's the first one. I wanted to move into one that's worship, space in the world.
Yeah.
And you wrote in there, we are wired for awe.
Yeah.
You talk about your story of the gray whale's adventure.
Yeah, that was fun.
Share that a little bit.
Well, you know, it's my daughter's very adventurous. You know, she leads outdoor adventures. You know, when she was in college, she would lead hikes and rock climbing things and all that. And I said, I think it'd be cool to go sea kayaking. And she's like, Mom, I don't think you're going to sea kayak. You're just not a sea kayaking kind of person. I'm like, game on. I'm going to. So that Christmas, I booked. We go to San Diego to visit my parents. They live in San Diego. And I booked us an adventure to go, you know, cross La Jolla Bay in little kayaks, hoping to see the whales migrating down the coast. And, you know, we're seeing all this stuff and, you know, dolphins and a lot of seagulls. There were a lot of seagulls. But then all of a sudden, you know, our guide had us paddling out, you know, and we're going and going. And we saw, you know, these gray whales, like, just coming up as there's, you know, and this, you know, spray coming up. And it was amazing. And we were in awe. And I was like, we have to put ourselves in the places where we can experience awe, even if it's like stepping out on your back of your backyard and looking up at the night sky, or, you know, taking a walk through the woods, you know, or through a park if you live in the city, you know, like put yourself in places where you can experience awe. And, you know, as much as my daughter was sort of joking with me about, hey, I don't know if you're going to do that, it made me think, am I the type of person who's finding places where I can experience awe? Do I have enough awe in my life? Because they've studied it, and people, human beings need to experience awe. It helps our emotional and spiritual health. It, like, even if you are a non-religious person, people say that, you know, these scientists are saying, well, human beings need to experience awe. It's part of what keeps us healthy, which I think is, I mean, it just reflects that, you know, we're created in the image of God, you know? So, anyway, we had fun doing that adventure, and it kind of jump-started a few, like, some changes that I made in my life after that. I've always been a runner, but kind of, like, I'd run for, like, a month or so and then, like, give it up, you know, and I started signing up for a few races, and actually my daughter and I ran a half marathon the following year that same year. And, you know, I just started thinking about, okay, am I doing things that just stretch me a little bit and also put me in a place where I can experience awe? And I think that's an important part of, you know, rather than trying to, oh, I got to try and worship God. It's like when you see something awe-inspiring, your body and your mind just naturally go, wow, whoa. And that's the beginning of worship.
That is beautiful. And coming from, I'm a preacher's kid. Mm-hmm. And so I was birthed into the church.
Yeah.
I grew up with it. And so I kind of know the ins and outs from both sides of the table. And you'll get those people, those Christians that will go out and say, man, worship just didn't cut it today. Mm-hmm. I wasn't feeling the music. Mm-hmm. The prayer wasn't there. I just kind of stood there. You shared a story, and I honestly, I don't remember if it was in worship, but I do remember you went to church, and you had to weave your way in to an area to sit down, and there was this lady, woman, standing next to you who head down and all of that, and I don't know if it was in worship, but it makes me think of that, because we as Christians are judgmental when it comes to how the services are to be run.
Right.
And how they should go and how they should feed me. It's all about me. Did I feel it today? Were the drums good enough? Oh, the drums were too much. They were too loud for my ears.
Was it too loud? Was it too quiet? Right. You know.
But you had
consumer of it.
Right. You had this experience. Tell a little bit about that story, because I think people will look at it a lot differently as to what worship really means.
Yeah. Well, what happened was I went to we have a midweek service at our church, and I, you know, kind of slid in there late. I was with my husband, and I noticed this woman who was kind of sad, and I could tell she was upset, and she was kind of leaning on this guy who she was with, and so I thought, okay, she's kind of like, at first I was kind of off put by her, like, what's her story? You know, what's she doing? And so I just ignored her, and I was worshiping, and I was kind of getting into singing and that kind of thing, and you know, I might have been like raising my hand, I had my eyes shut, and all of a sudden this woman is like hugging me, and I'm like, whoa, like, but I just felt like, okay, I'm supposed to be here for this person. And so I just put my arm around her, and like, we were singing together, and she was crying. And then she started telling me her story about this guy who had betrayed her, and she was not sure what she was supposed to do. And he had been, you know, all these terrible things that he had done to her. And I'm like, you deserve better. And like, I can't believe I'm having this conversation while the music's going on, you know, but I had this conversation about this relationship and how she needed to like never call the guy again, because you could tell she was, you know, thinking she should maybe like try to make it work with this guy. And I said, no, I said, you need to not text him or talk to him anymore. And she pulls out her phone. I said, you should just delete his number from your phone. Not meaning right then, but then she pulls out her phone and we're like deleting the number. And so I'm like, it'll be okay. It'll be. And we just like, we were I just was with her in, you know, the music is all around us. I'm not even singing anymore. I'm just letting her be with me. But afterwards, and then, you know, she was with this other guy, apparently not the guy who had, you know, mistreated her. It turned out he was like a small group leader in the, you know, in the ministry that she was in. And he told me afterwards, he like, you were a godsend for this lady. And I'm like, okay, you know, like sometimes you just have to put yourself in a space where you, you know, it's unexpected, you know, what God will do. And it's not about, did I get enough out of the music, and was it a song I liked or not, or was it good, as if I were consuming something, but did I look for God in the midst of an experience? Did I look for, where is God? You know, Mother Teresa talks about recognizing Jesus in his distressing disguise. And I felt like sometimes Jesus comes to us as a person in need, and we get to experience his presence by being simply with them, not solving their problem, not sending them to, you know, oh, you should go to this person or that agency or whatever, but just being with them in their pain can be a way of actually us being with Jesus. We think of, oh, I'm being Jesus to this person, but actually they're being Jesus to us too. Because when we welcome a stranger, when we give someone a cup of cold water, whether that's literal or figurative, we give it to Jesus. And so we get to experience the presence of God when we're just simply with people who need, who are in pain or in need of just a human interaction.
Whoa, that's worship in my opinion.
Yeah, it was moving. I remember it. So, you know, even though I wrote about it years later, it's, you know, we can easily, you know, go to worship and the next day forget what it was like, you know, but to me, that was an encounter with Christ, which is what worship is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in your book, you wrote, we cannot manufacture enjoyment of God, but it comes when we let go of our self-absorption and needs and give glory to whom it's due.
Yeah, that's pretty good, huh?
It is really good. Yeah, that's why I pulled it out.
It's Sometimes people read me a quote, I go, oh, because honestly, writing is a type of worship for me. Like sometimes when I'm writing, like I'll feel like God is just giving me words to say, you know, and I just like taking notes as God is communicating to me. And so then when I hear it later, I'm like, oh, and I just have to give God credit. You know, like I couldn't have come up with that on my own. But it is what God put on my heart in that moment as I was writing, and I just try to be obedient to what he's telling me. So, and I hope it helps somebody, you know?
Yeah, I think it has already. Oh, definitely. And you all are going to want to pick up your own copy of God Space, Embracing the Inconvenient Adventure of Intimacy with God. Well, we've covered two. Well, technically we've covered three because we talked about hospitality a little bit. We snuck that one in there, which was a really great one. I love that one too. But I do a lot here on Create Your Now called the KISSes, the Keep It Simple strategy. Mm-hmm. And the key word is simple. And in your book, you write on simplicity, space in my soul.
Yeah.
You say simplicity as a practice offers us freedom.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we long for freedom, but then we think we can buy freedom at the Container Store. You know, like if I just get organized, if I just have this, then my life will be simpler. And a lot of times we think of simplicity as, you know, our culture. If you look at advertising, so many things try to promise us simplicity. You know, I mean, there's coffee and tea and food and things that are named, like have simplicity in the name, and Real Simple Magazine, which offers some tips on organizing, but also ads for all the stuff that you think will make you happy, you know? And so simplicity is really, it's again, just like hospitality as a spiritual practice is different from hospitality, our culture's definition of it. Simplicity is kind of the same. Like we think, oh, okay, I just got to go to the Container Store and like organize my stuff. And, but really Christian simplicity is a singular focus on God. You know, when Jesus says, seek first the kingdom of God and all these other things will be added onto you. That's really what simplicity is, seeking first God's kingdom. And what does that look like? That's something that you have to figure out. And there's no one easy prescription, but it's not, again, it's not a Pinterest, it's not a organization. You can live in simplicity in a cluttered environment even, you know, I mean, it's not about the physical space. Eventually simplicity may impact your physical space and amount of stuff you have, but it's not about your stuff. The stuff is sort of a side effect of living in simplicity, because when your number one priority is seeking God's kingdom, then you don't need to buy more stuff or have more stuff in order to, because we want meaning. And a lot of times we think, well, if I have this, my life will be better, or people will like me more, or I can't have people over because they don't have nice enough furniture or dishes or whatever. And so we think, if I do that, then I can have simplicity and hospitality. But that's not how it works, you know. Have people over with the old chip dishes and, you know.
The food will taste better.
Yeah. Use the stuff you already have. But again, the simplicity thing is really about choosing to be content. And I think contentment is something we strive after. And we have perfectionistic tendencies, you know, and we think in order to be simple, I have to be perfect. And that's not what it's about, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in your chapter, there's a story that you share about your friend, and she gives you her clothes. And
yeah.
Some of those clothes even still have the tags on them.
Right.
But in that you say, I didn't know at the time because my soul was cluttered, preventing me from knowing myself.
Very bold.
Yeah.
And that was a hard part to write, you know, that, but I think sometimes we just, if somebody, especially, you know, you're trying to be thrifty. So if people give you stuff, you go, oh, okay, thanks. This is really cool. Like, wow, these are really nice clothes. Or we just accumulate stuff even without overspending. We just accumulate stuff. I was really in that story. I had read Marie Kondo's book about organizing, Japanese organizing, and she suggests, you know, asking, does this item spark joy? And if not, you know, to get rid of it. And she's very minimalist. But I thought that was an interesting question. Like, does a sweater spark joy? Does a, you know, whatever you have, you know, does your stuff spark joy? And I think it led me to clean out my closet, but it also led me to maybe ask some questions about relationships. I think over the years have really tried to let go of people pleasing, and you know, I can easily get into codependent type of, you know, not heavily so, but like where I'm the one making the effort in the relationship, or I want things to work a certain way. And so sometimes you have to go, you know what, with friendships even, this person has been in my life for a season, but now it's time to let it go and to say thank you for the good things. And that was the case in that situation. I had to kind of just let go of that friendship. And, you know, sometimes people move away or you grow in different directions from friends. Not everybody can be a lifetime friend. I have a lot of friends who I'm so blessed. I have a group of friends that we've lived in the same neighborhood for 20 years. And I have friends who I've had for all those 20 years, you know, since the kids were in, you know, preschool. And I'm thankful for those. But then there are some friendships that we have to go, I have to let go because this person, it's taking a lot of my energy and it's not even, you know, and sometimes people are ready to move on and you have to just let them go, you know, even if you're not ready to let them go, you have to let them go. So, and again, if your primary thing is your relationship with Jesus, then we can, you know, say, okay, we can keep from elevating relationships with other people into that space that God is supposed to have. You know, Jesus told us to love God and love our others, right? So we have to love others, and we want to, and we get a lot from that, and we're able to give a lot in that, but we Jesus needs to come first. And I think sometimes that's simplicity means letting go of relationships that are maybe not healthy or that we're supposed to let go of.
Mm-hmm. And with the new year, no time like the present.
Right. Yeah. What is in your life? And, you know, a number of times over the years, I've had to look at my friendships and go, okay, do I have a bunch of friends who are at a surface level, or do I have a couple friends that are deeper, you know, and what do I need to do to nurture those friendships that are deeper? I think that can really help us in this whole idea of God space too, is to you can't be deep and best friends with everybody, but who are the people who have potential to go a little deeper, and even inviting people into that, you know, hey, could we, you know, once in a while get together and not just have coffee, but talk about like how we're doing spiritually, or, you know, how our marriages really are going, or, you know, like invite and I think sometimes people long for that type of connection, but they're afraid to ask for it, you know, and it takes a certain amount of vulnerability to do that, but it, again, it creates God space in our life when we can have those type of friendships.
All the more reason why you're going to want to pick up your own copy of God Space, Embracing the Inconvenient Adventure of Intimacy with God. Well, Carrie, when they pick up their copy, what is your hope for those who read the book?
Well, I hope they don't go, okay, here's a checklist of 7 spiritual practices that I got to get done in order to make, you know, whatever. I don't want it to be achievement oriented at all. It's like you said, I have a lot of stories of my own life, but I hope that it'll inspire them to just seek God and ask God, what is it that God wants them to do? Like maybe just even picking one of these particular practices and saying, this is what I'm going to work on, you know, and I'm going to try, experiment with it, play with it. I would, you know, we can play with spiritual practices. That sounds kind of funny, but I think, you know, in one of my previous books about Sabbath, I talked about play being part of Sabbath. Like actually what, as we talked about before, what brings you joy? What's fun for you? Like try that. And, the other thing I would hope is, I have on my website, I have a study guide that goes with this, a free download, of questions, and get together with a friend or two and talk this through. You know, it has some discussion questions to get you talking about these ideas. And I hope that people don't just read it and go, well, that's interesting and that works for her, but that would never work for me. I tried very hard to invite people into something that's accessible. And I hope that they would go, all right, this is a jumping off point for me. I don't have to do it exactly the same way, but it's a jumping off point for me to say, how can I create some space for God in my life? And how can I embrace this adventure of intimacy with God? It's sometimes, it is messy. It's inconvenient. It's maybe we do it differently. You know, one of the things I didn't write about in the hospitality chapter is one of the ways that I'm expressing hospitality right now or practicing it is about a year ago, I started visiting a refugee family who had just come over. They came over like the day before the first attempt at a travel ban was put in place. And so they came into a country where they had been working in refugee camps and working for, you know, it usually takes a few years for a refugee to make it to the United States. And they get here and kind of are aware that the environment is not, you know, some people are welcoming and some people are not. So I've been meeting with them. For the first few, half a year I would go every week. Now I go every other week or so. And this young family, they're a young couple who's about the same age as my daughter. And they have two little kids. And, you know, there's a language barrier, but thank you, Jesus, for Google Translate. Thank you, Google, for Google Translate also. We laugh. I play with the kids. You know, they feed me. We have a great time. And even though it's at their apartment, it's creating some space for them to have be loved. And that I think is hospitality too. And that doesn't mean everybody who reads the book has to go visit refugees. You know, but what is God laying on your heart to do? You know, what is God asking you to do to create some space where people feel welcome? It might be your kids' friends. It might be, you know, your neighbor. It might be your kids' teacher. It might be your refugee family. What is it, you know? And then boldly follow God's call. That's what I hope, is that women readers will boldly follow God's call.
Whoa. I say amen to that. I mean, you know, what else could you do for the new year? It's time to create your God space at God's pace. And Carrie, you have just opened up your heart and allowed your heart to be accessible to us. And so thank you so much for being vulnerable and telling things sometimes that maybe we second guess ourselves because it shows the raw side, the raw edges of maybe who we don't want to see. But we don't have to be the Martha Stewart. We don't have to be Real Simple Magazine. God just asks us to be who he created, and that's you.
Yeah. And no matter what, God loves you. You know, I just hope people remember that. Like, even if you don't do anything in this book, you know, if you love him and desire a relationship with him, he is reaching out toward you as well. And that is a great starting point. That can energize us to do things we never thought we could.
Definitely. Well, I know people are going to want to connect with you. So where can they find
Absolutely.
You?
Yeah. So my website is carriewyattkent.com. And that's the best place to read my blog and to connect with me. There's a way to get in touch with me there. I'm on Facebook and Twitter as well. And would love to connect with people there. I'm pretty easy to find. Just come to my website and love to have you connect with me there. That's great.
Awesome. Well, we will have all the links in the show notes. But before I let you go, I have one last question.
Okay.
The series is called My Strength is My Story. What has your story gifted you?
That's an interesting question. What has my story gifted me? I think my story has given me compassion. I grew up like you, you know, in the church. I wasn't a pastor's kid, but I grew up in the church and then went through, you know, went to a Christian college and kind of went through a season like many of us do, where I questioned and I doubted and I, you know, kind of didn't really stop believing in God, but I kind of stopped acting like I believed in Him, like a lot of us do, you know, a little season of rebellion or whatever. And I've written about that before, but eventually, you know, God wooed me back. I think, it wasn't me. It was God just wooing me back. And so it's helped me to not be judgmental of people who are going through a tough season or are even, you know, walking away from God. Or, you know, when my kids went through seasons of doubt, I really said that was okay. You know, it's fine to ask questions. It's fine to doubt. That's part of how you build your faith. And I think my story of having made mistakes or just even sort of becoming apathetic about God has given me compassion for people who do the same, and just to be able to offer them hope. Like, you are never beyond the reach of God's love. You know, no matter what, nothing you've done could make Him love you less, and nothing you do makes Him love you more. Like, the just profound mystery of grace, it's not just a theory for me. I feel like I've experienced grace in so many ways that it's enabled me to have compassion for people who are going through tough things or are doubting God.
Beautiful. And you took your heart and put it on paper. And I thank you so much for spending time with us. I cannot wait till book number 12. You're already working on it, right?
I have a lot of ideas. A friend and I are talking about collaborating on a book. But then also, I obviously had more to say about hospitality, so I had to cut a lot from this book to fit it in. So there may be something on that down the road. So, but I also, I think you mentioned, I run a little company called A Powerful Story, and I help other people write their books. This year I've had a number of different projects where I've helped people either through editing, helping them self-publish, you know, collaborative writing, helping them write their story. And that's very fulfilling to me as well. I feel like, you know, a lot of people have a story to tell and they don't know how to do it. And so that's what we do. That's what I do. I come alongside them, and whether it's creating a curriculum or helping them self-publish a book, that's fun for me too. And, so that's part of the writing that I do, and that feels good too. So,
well, I'm looking forward to the next chapter, whatever it looks like.
Whatever it looks like, yeah. No, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, well, I have a lot of ideas.
Well, I look forward to having you back on, and it doesn't have to be for a book. We could just have you back on and we can chat, because I love this coffee chat time.
Yeah, this is great. I love it. I'll come back anytime you want. So
awesome. Thank you so much, Carrie. Many blessings to you in this new year.
Thanks, Christiane. I've just been a pleasure to be with you and to talk with you.
Feeling inspired, ready to train for life, and love your journey? Visit createyournow.com for more incredible resources to help you along the way. We'll see you next time on Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. And remember, always be sure you consult your physician before beginning any health and fitness plan.